Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Samach. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find 18 lines from the top of Daf Samach. The Mishnah opens with the same three words that the previous Mishnah opened with, Hasholechas HaBe'era, one who literally sends a fire. In the previous Mishnah, we discussed entrusting a fire to a Chere Shetiv Katon, and here we discuss another aspect, and that is in terms of what when the guilt arises. So, Hasholechas HaBe'era, the Ochla Eitzim O Avonim O Afar, one started a fire, and it consumed wood or stones, it singed the stones or Afar. Rashi says regarding Afar, which is dirt, someone had plowed a field and a fire spread through the field and ruined the plowed area. So for all of these things, Chayav, the owner of the fire, bears responsibility and must compensate for the damage. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Ki seitze eish umotza koitzim, v'nech al godish o hakoma o hasode shalem yishalem mav'iras ha-be'ra. When a fire spreads forth and it chances upon koitzim or thorns, nechal godish, godish is a heap of grain, or koma, or standing grains, standing meaning growing from the ground, or a sadeh, or a field, so the one who lit the fire must pay for it. Before we go further in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have our nosei, combined with a mivneh. Nosei is a topic heading, mivneh is a structural note, where we feature a diamond. The diamond marking you can see appears in the Gemara just simply by giving a brief scan over the next number of lines. You'll see the diamond appearing a number of times. And our note indicates in the margin, benizkei eish, regarding the damage of fire, lomo hatoiro mefaretes, why does the Torah enumerate Koitzim, Godish, Koma, and Sadeh. So now we turn to the Gemara, and each diamond, I think it's obvious, you can see, highlights each one of the words found in the Pasuk. So, Omar Rava, Lomali, the cause of Rachmona, Koitzim, Godish, Koma, V'Sadeh. Why the need for enumerating each one of the examples? Would it not have been sufficient just to state one of the examples? No, it's necessary to teach each one. The Ikos of Rachmona, Koitzim, had the Torah written that there's guilt for Koitzim, Havi Amina Koitzim Hu Dechayev Rachmona. I would have thought that for the consumption of thorns. So that's what the Torah holds one responsible for. The Shchiach Eish Gabayu. It's common for fire to burn thorns. Ushchiach de poshan. It's common for people to be reckless in that context. Rashi says the shchiach eish gabayo ain bnei adam mizdaharin bohen. People are not careful with regard to fires around thorns. The lekach undin. Thorns are actually something that are often burnt. People will, let's say, clear away a field full of thorns by burning it. But that, of course, it has to be a controlled fire. Hilkoch ikolameimar ze posha. Therefore, when it comes to thorns being burnt, let us just say parenthetically that when we speak about thorns being burnt in this context, we're talking about thorns that had value to the owner of the thorns, hence the need for offering compensation. So, since thorns are often burnt, we will say that a fire that spreads and burns thorns was a function of recklessness on behalf on the part of the owner of that fire. We continue in the Gemara. Avol godish delo shriach eish gabayhu velo shriach deposha. When it comes to a pile of grains being burnt, there's room to think that since people don't burn grains, and it's not common that people are reckless around them, maybe the fire that burnt the grains was a function of something that's beyond one's control. It's oinus, aim all low, and therefore I would have thought that there would be exemption. Hence, it was necessary for the Torah to spell out that if a fire consumes someone else's grains, he must compensate. V'ikosav rachmona godish, and had the Torah written the case of the pile of grains, have amino godish chayav rachmona mishum dehefsid merubahu. I would have thought that the Torah imposes the obligation of compensation because that involves a major loss, a large loss. There, the pile of grains is something of great value. Avol kaitzim dehefsid muat emalo, but thorns represent something of very little value, very little loss to the owner. Maybe one isn't obligated to compensate for that. Therefore, the Torah, in addition to Godish, had to spell out Koitzim. Koma lomali, why the need for spelling out Koma? So the answer is from Koma, from the example of standing grains, we learn a principle in regarding fire destruction. Ma Koma begolui, af kol begolui. Just like standing grains are exposed, they're visible, so too that anything that is exposed, that is consumed by a fire, compensation must be made for the damage to the exclusion, and this is really the main point, to the exclusion of what we call tomun. Tomun is something that is covered, that is hidden. If there is, let us say, a pile of hay, and in the pile of hay there were vessels of value, and the pile of hay went up in flames, whoever put the pile of hay in flames will not have to compensate for the vessels buried therein. That's called tomun, it's hidden away. So from the fact that Torah says one is obligated to compensate for koma, we learn from that, just like koma is something exposed, there is a chiyuv to compensate, so to only that which is exposed, to the exclusion of something hidden. The Gemara continues, though, Ula Rabbi Yehuda de Machayev anizke tomun be'esh, koma lomali. Rabbi Yehuda, a dissenting opinion regarding the matter of tomun, who says that there is no difference between exposed or hidden. One has to compensate in the case of setting it on fire. What do I gain by the presence of the word koma? So here we have a second use of the word koma. L'rabbis kol bale koma, to include all creatures that stand, and creatures or life forms that stand. That includes Bali Chaim, animals and trees. So that even though the Pasuk says Koma, which is a reference to standing grains, what is the necessity of having that in the Pasuk? Especially once we've spoken about Koitzim and Godish. So it's an extra word, so to speak, to include beyond standing grains, animals and trees. V'rabbonon l'rabbis kol bale koma mino luhu, and the Rabbonon who used koma for the exclusion of tomun, where do they learn the inclusion of bale koma? Nafka luhu me oi hakoma. They learn it from that expression, the oi, the word o hakoma, which is an additional expression. The Rabbi Yehuda oi, the word oi for Rabbi Yehuda, miboyale, is necessary for him, lichalek, for literally for separation, for itemizing. In other words, the pasuk that describes fire leading to compensation, one should not think that it's only if the fire consumes every one of the things mentioned in the pasuk. Even if one of the items mentioned in the pasuk is burnt, compensation must be made. That is what is meant by lechalek. Rabbanon lechalek menalahu. Where will the Rabbanon learn that concept from? The idea of itemizing. Naklu me oi hasodeh. From the word oi that's together with sadeh. So the Rabbanan, in the meantime, used the word oi by koma for the rabbis called balei koma, and the word oi that you find by sadeh, the Rabbanan use for lechalik. For Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda already learned lechalik from the oi hakoma. What does he learn from the oi by sadeh? So the Gemara answers, nothing of any novel nature is derived by Rabbi Yehuda, rather it's Aidi de Kosav Rachmana Oi Hakoma, since the Torah used the expression O together with Koma, Kosav Oi HaSadeh. So it uses the word Oi together with Sadeh. We'll call it for stylistic reasons, but as far as revealing a new point of law, that we don't see according to Rabbi Yehuda. Sadeh Lomali. Now, once what we've figured out what Kitzim, Godish, and Koma is doing, what about the fourth example in the Pasuk, Sadeh? Lasuyeh, to include Lichko Niro V'sichsich Avonov. To include what we would say is the unexpected by way of fire damage. To include stones that are singed, and that's the Sichsich Avonov. Lichko Niro, we mentioned earlier, that's the case of a plowed field that was overrun by a fire. V'lichtoiv rachmona sodeh v'lo boi hanoch. Let the Torah write just sodeh, and there would be no necessity in writing the others. In other words, if one is chayev for lichko niro v'sisuch havonov, which I'm suggesting are things that you wouldn't expect fire to be held accountable for the owner of the fire held accountable for, nevertheless, you have to compensate for that, so certainly for the items mentioned before. So the Gemara responds, Tzricha, it's not sufficient to write Sadeh and not write the others. D'i Kosav Rachmona Sadeh, had the Torah written just Sadeh, Have Amina, I would have thought that the word Sadeh really is Ma Sheba Sadeh in Midi Achrina Lo, only that which is contained within the field, but not other things. We take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Have amina mashe basodeh, tevua komar kro." Grains are something you find in a field. Velo karka mamish, but not the ground itself. We mentioned a moment ago that fire is chaya for lichkoniru, for singeing a plowed field. I would have thought that one would not be chaya for that. One would not be obligated to compensate for that. Lochi kosav koma behedya. Therefore, the Torah spelled out grains, standing grains, explicitly. So once you've spelled out grains explicitly, dashtis rabbi sodeh legufa shokaka. Therefore, sodeh is now available to include even the ground itself. So just to read the last line of the Gemara again, is the ikos rachmona sodeh havamina mas sheba sodeh in midiachrin olo. I would have thought the grains within a field one is obligated to compensate for, but the ground itself, no. Kol mash malon, the word sodeh in the pasuk comes to tell me that even for singeing the ground itself, one would have to compensate. Before we go further in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, which reads Droshos, you can refer to them as agodos, agadic passages, Be'inyan Puronus, regarding heavenly retribution, v'shehi maschilo min atzadikim. That the retribution, the punishment from on high, starts with the righteous. They're the first ones to pay the price. Now that, I'm sure, raises many eyebrows. Let's see what our intent is by continuing in the Gemara. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni Amar Rav Yonason, Ein Purnus Bo Li'olam El Bizman Shorishoyim Bo'olam. Retribution, punishment, does not come into the world other than a time in which the wicked are in the world. Ve'eno Maschelas Ela Min HaTzadikim Tchila. But when it begins, when the retribution begins, it begins with the righteous. Shenemar, the Pasuk, has an allusion to this. Kiseitze Esh Umatsu Koitzim. That's the Pasuk, of course, that we featured in our Mishnah that describes the damage of fire. Amosai Esh Yoitza. When does fire break forth? And fire is now the example of Puranos, of punishment, of destruction. Bizman Shekoitzim Mitsuyin La. And the Pasuk said the fire comes forth. Umatsa. Motza, in this context, means when the koitzim, when the thorns are found within, and the thorns are the, is the analogy to the wicked. V'yeino mascheles elo min hatzadikim tchila, and the point that it doesn't begin, the punishment doesn't start other than, it doesn't start other than with the righteous. Where do we know that from? Shenemar v'nechal godish. The verb form, v'nechal, is different than v'ochal godish, lo ne'mar. The pasuk doesn't say, after the thorns are consumed, v'ochal godish, and then the grains are consumed. That's not what it says. Elo v'nechal godish. That verb form, v'nechal, means she'ne'echal godish kvar. They had already been consumed. In other words, by the time the fire is said to destroy the thorns, the wicked, it has already burnt, it has already destroyed the pious. Hence, from this pasuk, you see these two points. Namely, that Puranas doesn't come to the world other than when the Rishoyim are there, and when it comes, it starts with the righteous. I take it as obvious that you recognize that the parallel to the righteous in the pasuk is the reference to the grains. And we already mentioned that the parallel, the analogy to the wicked, was in the form of the kites and the thorns. Toni Rav Yosef. The word Toni is spelled here with an aleph. It more often appears without the aleph in it, but it's the same meaning for us. Rav Yosef teaches the following Tanaic source. Now, if you just briefly give an overview of this source, or a bird's eye view of the source, you'll notice the same dashed underlining continuing the theme that we mentioned earlier. So Rav Yosef teaches, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk that says, V'atem lo seitzu ish mi pesach beiso ad boker? This pasuk is in the context of the Makos Mitzrayim, where the Jewish people were warned during the what's referred to the plague of the firstborn, not to leave their houses until the morning. Kevon shenitan reshus lamashvis, once license is given to the force of destruction. Maybe you want to refer to that as the angel of death. Eino mavchin bein tzadikim l'rishayim. No distinction is made between the righteous and the wicked. In the pasuk that we just referred to, it was mentioned that you, the reference to the Jewish people, shall not leave their houses until the morning, that particular night, the night when the affliction of the Egyptian firstborn took place. So if the plague is designed to be against the Egyptians, why should the Jews have to worry? Why should they have to remain inside? So the explanation was what we just mentioned, that once the angel of death is given license to kill, it does not make a distinction between the righteous and the wicked. And that, of course, could serve as an explanation for many, many tragedies in Jewish history, where you find many righteous people dying along with many others, and the claim, well, if they were so righteous, so why should they have died? So we'll say the partial explanation to that phenomenon is this, that once there is license given to the mashchis, to the force of destruction, to destroy, then no distinction is made. V'lo od, elo shemaschu min atzadik in tchila. Not only that, but when destruction and death comes into play, it starts with the righteous. Shenemar, the pasuk says, v'hechrati mimech tzadik v'rosha. In the order of things, you can see the tzadik comes first. Tzadik, and then the rosha, the wicked. Bochi Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, he taught this source, and he cried, Kulei hai nami la'ayin domin. With all of the efforts to achieve piety, are we like nothing? Destruction comes, the righteous along with the wicked, everyone's wiped out, it's like we're nothing. Omar le Abaye. Abaye says in response, no, tivusahu l'gabayu. This phenomenon of the tzaddik suffering and being eliminated before the wicked is actually a favor for the tzaddik. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, ki mipnei hara ne'asaf tzaddik. Because of the oncoming evil, the righteous is gathered in. So that the tzaddik shouldn't have to be exposed to the evil and wickedness that will follow. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Le'olam yikonis odom b'chitoiv v'yetzei b'chitoiv. When a person is traveling, he should make sure that he gets off the road into his dwelling, into his inn, or wherever he's going to spend the night while the sun is still shining. Not wait till darkness sets in. And when it's a question of continuing the journey, not to leave on the journey until, once again, the sun is shining. Not to start before sunrise. Where is this idea, where is this advice learned from? It's actually from the same pasuk we just quoted at the bottom of Omid Aleph, V'atem lo yseitzu ish mipesach beisoy ad boker. You see, from here, not to leave your house until boker, until the morning. Tanu Rabbanan. Here we have a new marking, a house shape, and on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh heading, we indicate that we'll highlight Dever Bo'ir. Dever is often translated as pestilence, a type of plague, sickness, death in the city, and later we'll have a source that begins with the expression Ro'ov Bo'ir, when there is a famine in the city. So that, and you'll notice there will be a contrasting advice between the case of Dever Bo'ir. The source immediately tells you Kanes Raglecha, and with regard to Ro'ov Bo'ir, I hope you see a number of lines down the next house marking there, it says Pazer Raglecha, spread yourself out. So now the Gemara. Dever Bo'ir, in a situation that there is plague in the city, Kanes Raglecha, withdraw inwards. Shenemar, and once again, the pasuk that we've been citing along the way, V'atem lo seitzu ish mipesach beiso ad boker. Another pasuk is cited. V'oimer, lech ami bo b'chaderecha, v'skor delascha ba'adecha. The Novi, the prophet, says to the nation, withdraw into your houses, into your rooms, your houses, close the door behind you. V'yomer, and a third pasuk, Michutz tishakel cherev u'mechadorim emo. Outside, the sword is killing people, and from within, there is fear. As is often the case when a source is quoting several psukim that seem to review the same point, what is the necessity of having all of the verses? So you'll see that we've used a double underline, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, the V'chi Tema is Hezber Lama Muva Kol HaPsukim Shemofim B'Moker Dever Bo'ir. What do I need all of these psukim to review this, to review the same point? So the Gemara asks, "My v'omer? Why the necessity of the additional pasuk?" V'chitemo hanimili b'leilyo. One might have thought that the restriction of being outside is only at night. Avo b'yomo lo. But by day, there is no restriction. In other words, the first pasuk that was cited indicated that don't go out ad boker. So, only the night there is a restriction. I think we mentioned, but we'll say it again, that the pasuk that was cited initially, v'atem lo seitzu, that was by the plague, there was death of the firstborn of the Egyptians. So it was an example of dever in the context of this source. So there the restriction was not to be out at night, but by day there'd be no problem. Toshma, therefore the additional pasuk is cited, lecha mi bo b'chadarecha uskar d'loscha, which doesn't qualify when to be inside, so it means to be inside at all times, even during the day when it's a time of pestilence. Maybe the advice to stay within is when there is no fear from within. When there is fear from within, Rashi speaks here about the he speaks about fear, we'll say fear of death, when there is fear from within. Kinofik, maybe let him, it's better to go out, Yosef Beini and she, and sit amongst other people, but Safsa Bialmo Tfei Mali, sitting in the comfort of having others around you is better. Toshma, therefore the third pasuk is cited, Michutz Tishakil Cherev Umechadorim Emo, Afalgav de Mechadorim Emo, even though there is fear from within, it's worse outside, Michutz to Shakel Cheref. A detail that we didn't mention a moment before was that the posuk of Michutz to Shakel Cheref, the Cheref referred to there, the sword, is the sword of the Malach HaMoves. That we're talking about a time of pestilence, so the sword of the Malach HaMoves is killing outside, whereas inside there is fear of death, but it's not as blatant, it's not as open as that which is taking place outside. Hence the counsel, the advice to remain indoors. Rava be'idon rischa. Rava, at the time, idon is at the time of rischa, of dever, of pestilence, have a sochar kovi. He would shut his windows. Dechtiv, the pasuk says, ki ola moves ba chaloneinu. Moves is a reference to death, and Rava takes that to mean a reference to pestilence is coming through our windows. As is the case in many passages of this nature, you can rest assured that there is some deeper meaning to this than the mere translation that we're offering. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we have next house marking, Ro'ov Bo'ir. In the case of famine in town, Pazer Aglecha, get away. Literally, scatter your feet means go away. Shenemar, the posuk by Avram Avinu, features a situation of famine, and it says, Vayi Rav Oretz, Vayered Avram Mitzrayim Logur Sham. There was a famine in the land, and Avram left the land to Mitzrayim. Viomer, and again you have another posuk, Im Omarnu Novoi Hoir, V'orov Boir V'omasnu Sham. This pasuk describes the four Mitzrayim that's featured in Sefer Melachim, who were outside the city walls, and it was a time of famine, and their choice was either to go into town where there was famine, or to give themselves over to the enemy that was laying siege. So, what do I need the second pasuk for? V'chitema you might have thought, had I just the first pasuk, Hani mili hecho deleko sofek nefoshes. Leave town, go, in the case of Avram, go to Mitzrayim, where going to Mitzrayim did not involve any life-threatening events. Avol hecho deiko sofek nefoshes lo. But where the alternative posed a life threat, as we mentioned, in the case of the posuk, the second posuk cited, their alternative was to go into the army, the enemy camp. Well, going in, giving yourself up to the enemy camp involves sofek nefashos, a doubt whether you'll continue living. Therefore, even in a case like that, stay out of the town, stay out of where there's famine. That's why the second pasuk is cited, Toshma. This pasuk that is the continuation of the pasuk just cited in the second pasuk cited in the source, L'chu v'nipla el machne aram im yechayunu nichye. They opted to go give themselves up into the enemy camp of Aram. If we live, we live there. There's food. There's a chance we'll continue living there. So that even in the face of sofek nefashos, the better to go into that type of danger than to go into town where there is famine. As we continue, you notice immediately the use of a diamond. We're highlighting in this source Dever Bo'ir, and in contrast, Shalom Bo'ir. Tonu Rabbanan, Dever Bo'ir, if there is pestilence in the city, Al Yalech Odom Be'emtza HaDerech, do not walk in the middle of the road. B'nei Shemalech HaMoves Mahalech Be'emtza HaDrochem, because at that time, the angel of death is walking in the middle of the road. He's walking high-handedly, causing death all over. The Kevon De'ahiva Lei Rishusa, once he, this angel of death, is given license to kill, Maski Lehedya, he walks straight forward in an open fashion in the middle of the road. Shalom Bo'ir, if the opposite, if there's a time of peace and tranquility and health in the city, Al Yalech Betzidei Drachim, don't walk along the sides of the road. The Kevon Deles Lei Rishusa, since he, the Malach HaMavetz, does not have license to walk in an open fashion, Machbi Chavuyeh, he walks in a hidden fashion, Umaski, and Maski means he walks, so he Maski, it's Machbi Chavuyeh, Umaski, walks along in a hidden, unobtrusive fashion, and there you will find him, along the sides, and not out in the open. Tonu Rabbanan, Dever Bo'ir, Al Yikonis Odom Yochid Lebeis HaKnesses. When there is pestilence in the city, one should not walk in by himself to a synagogue. Shemalech HaMoves Mafkid Shom Kelov. The angel of death entrusts his vessels, his sword, his killing devices over there, there in the synagogue. Bahani Mili, this is the case, this advice not to enter by yourself to the synagogue, Hecha Delo Koru Be Dardiki. If it's a synagogue in which Dardiki are children do not study Torah, Velo Matzlu Be Asora, or it's a place where you don't have 10 people that gather for davening, for prayer. We mentioned before, once again, these are esoteric ideas. We are translating, but the deeper meaning is something to pursue, to research. Tonu Rabbanan, Klovim Boichim, Malach HaMoves Bo'al Le'ir. When the dogs are howling, or literally when they're crying, that's a sign that the angel of death has come to town. Klovim Mesachakim, if the dogs are laughing, then Eliyahu HaNavi Bo Le'ir. Then Elijah the prophet has come to town. Exactly how to distinguish between dogs crying and dogs laughing, once again, it seems that there is an allusion here to something deeper. Fahani Mili, this reference to the dogs and their reaction, their noises, is that's true, the less Bahu Nikeva, that there isn't a female dog in the vicinity. So then we can explain the noises as we just did. But if there's a female in the vicinity, then it's because of the female dog that the other dogs, the male dogs, are making the sounds. Yosef Rav Ami Rav Asi Kameid Rav Yitzchok Nafcho. We have two rabbis sitting in front of Rav Yitzchok. The two rabbis, Rav Ami and Rav Asi. Mar Omar Le. Now, we go on with the story, but who says what is not revealed by the Gemara. Mar Omar Le, Lema Mar Shmaitza. One of the two, Rav Ami or Rav Asi, said to Rav Yitzchok, asked him to hold forth, to lecture on matters of, we'll say, a legal nature. Mar Omar Le, Lema Mar Agadita. And the other one said, I want to hear you hold forth on matters of a story or agadic nature. Posach lemeimar agadato, he started saying something of an agadic nature, velo shavik mor, and the other one did not allow him to continue. Posach lemeimar shmaitza, he then tried to hold forth in legal matters, velo shavik mor, and the other one did not allow him. Omar lahem, Rabbi Yitzchok says to them, em shalachem moshal lema hadov adam, I will give you an analogy to what can this be compared? Ladam sheish lo shtei noshim. A man who has two wives. Achas yalda v'achas zakena. One is young and the other is older. Yalda malaketis lo levonos. The young woman picks out of her husband's head the white hair. She's young. She wants her husband to be youthful, appear youthful like she is. So she picks out his white hairs. Zakena, the older woman, malaketis lo shchoros. She is busy picking out the dark hairs that she's older. She wants her husband to look like her. And the result of these two women and their hair plucking, nimso kereach mikan umikan. He then, it'll turn out then to be bald from both sides. Omar lahem, so Rabbi Yitzchok continues after describing his feeling toward them, stopping him on both tracks. So Rabbi Yitzchok continues and says, "Ihachi, if this be the case, emaluchu milso deshavi letravaychu. I'm going to say one thing that will be of benefit to the two of you. In other words, in one verse, I will be able to demonstrate something of an agadic and something of a halachic nature, and you'll both be happy." So he cites he starts with an agadic point. We have a little aleph in the pasuk to indicate stage one, and then a few lines later, you'll see, if you count down three more lines in the middle of the line, you'll see a beis where we say shmaitza. That's where he takes off on the same pasuk, but a point of halacha. So he starts and says, Kiseitze eish umotza koitzim. The fire goes forth and finds thorns. The word teitze me'atzmo. Rashi explains, Kiseitze me'atzmo anachnu goramnu lo. We caused the fire. Shekil kalnu, that we messed things up. Rashi continues, but let us first go into the Gemara. The pasuk goes on to say, and we're reading in the Gemara, Shalem yishalem hamavir es habeira. The one who lit the fire will pay, will compensate, will offer restitution. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Olai l'shalem es habeira shehiv arti. It's upon me to burn, to pay for the fire that I caused. So if you go back to the Rashi where we left off, we mentioned that the beginning of the pasuk, which said ki seitze me'atzmo, indicates that we, the people, caused the fire, caused the destruction. And The Rashi goes on to say, "V'yivdiach HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'shalem kilu hu hivira," and the Almighty promises to pay, to compensate, to offer restitution, as if He lit the fire, as if He's responsible. He's not responsible. Our own sins brought upon ourselves the destruction. It's not something that God initiated, and yet the Almighty says, "I will pay. I will reward you, compensate you, as if I am the one that initiated the fire." The Gemara goes on, "Ani hitzeti eish b'tzion. I caused the fire in Zion. Shenemar vayatzet eish b'tzion vatochal yisaydeseho. And he lit the fire in Zion, and it consumed its foundations. Vani osi livnoisa b'eish. And I, in the future, will rebuild Zion through fire. Shenemar, Vani Eye Lo Chomaseish Soviv L'chovoid Eye B'secha. And I will be a wall of fire. Maybe from here comes the expression firewall. I will be a wall of fire around, surrounding, and I will be the source of honor from within. So, you see that the Almighty has the infinite love, infinite compassion, where even for something that He kiviyochol is not responsible for, yet He accepts upon Himself the responsibility and offers the reward in kind. Shmaitza. Now the halachic analysis of this pasuk is as follows: the pasuk of Ki Teitzei Esh, Pasach Hakotzuv Benizkei Mamono. The pasuk opens up describing a person's property, person's possession, wreaking damage. That's what Ki Teitzei Esh implies. The fire came forth on its own, and it went and then consumed and did damage in the neighbor's domain. The siyem benizke gufo, and the continuation of the pasuk spoke about the mavir es habeira. That's a reference to the person himself causing the damage. So why is that? Why does the pasuk start off describing fire as a possession of the man, similar to a man's animal going and doing damage, person's vessels responsible for damage? That's mamono. Nizkei gufo is a reference to the person himself doing the damage. What do we learn from that? Lomar Loch, this teaches us, Isho Mishum Chitzov, that a person's fire or his responsibility with regard to fire is like his shooting of arrows. It's considered like a person himself did the damage. The halachic difference between Momon HaMazik and Odom HaMazik, Rashi points out, is that in the case of Momon HaMazik, when it's a person's property that causes damage, the only payment that is made is payment for the depreciation, for the nezek. Payment for pain, for unemployment, for embarrassment, those additional payments that we've discussed many times in the Masechta, we call the additional four payments, those are made only when it's Odom HaMazik. So, therefore, when a person is, we'll say, reckless with fire, and it eventually causes damage, and it damages a person, the owner of the fire will have to pay, in addition to the nezek, the depreciation, the damage cost, all the other costs as well. Before we continue in the Gemara, you might notice by scanning ahead a few lines, there are a few triangles. There's also a double underline that highlights the expression, "Komi boya lei," That indicates there was a question that needed answering. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading in Osei Mivneh, which reads, after featuring a triangle, Deois, these are opinions, Le'eze psak halacha hayazokuk David HaMelech b'shas milchoma. Which halachic ruling did David HaMelech need at the time of war? In other words, as there was a specific war that you can read about in the book of Samuel, Shmuel Bey's Perek Chav Gimel. And during that military episode, David HaMelech was in need of a psak halacha, a halachic ruling. What was it? So there are three opinions that we'll see through the Gemara. The first involves, he wanted to know, how do we rule regarding tomun be'esh? Tomun be'esh is the issue of something that is consumed by fire, but the item destroyed was hidden, was covered over while the fire was burning. So if you have a pile of hay, and in the hay there are utensils that are destroyed, now, those utensils are referred to by the term tomun bo'esh. They're hidden away while the fire is burning. Number two, a question concerning matzil atzmo b'momon chavero. A person, in order to save himself, has to destroy or damage property of his friend. Is that something that we can accept? Or you will say that, of course, to save your life, of course you can do so if at the expense of someone else's property. However, do you have to compensate him for that? And a third point is a question of gezel al menas l'shalim, where a person steals something with the intention of paying for it later. So now we turn to the Gemara. Vayis'ave David vayomar. The pasuk is in a rather a descriptive pictorial form, but we're going to offer the more, we'll say, the brass tacks explanation of what's really going on. So David HaMelech, literally, he was desirous, and he said, "Vayomar mi yashkeni mayim mibor beis lechem asher bashar." Literally, who will bring me water to drink from the pit in Beis Lechem, name of a place, in English we refer to it as Bethlehem, that is the pit of Beis Lechem that was at the gate. Now, what this pasuk means for us is David HaMelech was asking for water, means for a Torah ruling. The Torah is compared to Mayim in many places. So, who will bring me Torah from the Bor Beis Lechem Asher Bashar? The Shar is the gates, the courts, the Zikne O'ir, the Sanhedrin, the courts used to sit in session at the city's gates. So, he's asking for a halachic ruling to be brought to him from the court. The pasuk goes on to say, "Vayevaku shloishes hagiborim b'machle plishtim, v'avu ma'gibor beis lechem asher bashar." And these three warriors broke through enemy lines and drew the water from that from beis lechem. The pasuk goes on to say, and it says, "Vayisu vayoviu el David v'lo'ova lishtoisam vayasech oisam l'shem." They brought the information to David, and he didn't want to accept it, he didn't want to benefit from it, and he spilled it out to Hashem. That's a kind of a literal reading of things. The Gemara later will ask about each one of these phrases. So the Gemara, now, in addressing this pasuk, says, "My kome boyale." What question did David have? The Gemara immediately understands that the beginning of the pasuk that said "Vayisave David Vayomer Miashkeni Mayim" is a reference to David needing a question to be answered. So, what was the question? Omar Rava, Omar Rav Nachman, tamun bo'esh kame bayale I k'Rabbi Yehuda I k'Rabbanan. He was asking, what is the din? How do we rule with regard to tamun bo'esh? Do we rule like Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the owner of the fire must compensate for that which was buried away or hidden? Or do we rule like the Rabbanan that say there is an exemption for tamun bo'esh? Upostule ma de postule, and they answered him whatever the answer was. As far as the Gemara is concerned, it's not of significance to know which one of the two opinions they reported to him, but one of them was reported to him. Rav Huna Omar, Gedishim Disarm Disrael, Havu, there were piles of Jewish owned barley grains. Davu Mitri Plishtim Bahu, and within these piles of grains, the Philistines were hiding. The enemy was hiding within the piles. The Komibayale, and the question that David had was, Mau lahatzil atzmo b'momon chavero? Can I save myself at the expense of my friend's property? In this case, someone owned those piles of grain. In order to save himself, the idea would be they would put them on fire, and the enemies hiding within will die. Sholchule, they sent him the following answer. Osur lahatzil atzma b'momon chavero. It is forbidden for one to save themselves through momon chavero. Now, Tosfos's approach to this is, and we mentioned it earlier, the second to last Tosfos, let's read it together. Ma'u lahatzil atzma b'momon chavero. Iboyale, what he was asking is, Ichayav l'shalem kishihitzil atzmo b'nei pikuach nefesh. Does he have to offer restitution when he was saving himself from a life-threatening situation? So, in following the approach suggested by Tosfos, the answer was, you cannot save yourself, and I would add here, you can't save yourself for nothing. You have to pay for that. Avol ato, we continue in the Gemara. So the answer that was sent to David was that, in general, you cannot save your life at the expense of someone else's property for nothing. That's in general. Avalata, melechata, but you're a king. Mele umelech poreitz lasos loyderech ve'ein moichin biyodo. When a king needs to have his needs fulfilled, he can literally break through someone's fence, cut through their field to make a road. I might be mistaken, but I think there's a concept known in American constitutional law as the right of eminent domain. If that be the case, if there's any accuracy, so you can see that the source for that concept would be here, where a king has rights to take property as is needed for his purposes, and ve'ein mochin biyado means that no one protests. V'rabbonon v'teimo rabo bar mori omru. The rabbonon, some versions have it in the name of rabo, they said gedishim v'serim d'Israel havu. There were piles of barley grains owned by Jews, gedishim da'adoshim d'plishtim, and there were piles of Adoshim owned by the Philistines. Adoshim, another type of vegetation, oftentimes translated as lentils. They were there as well. The Komibaya Lahu, and the question that Dovid HaMelech wanted to know was, Ma'u litoil gedishim shel sorim d'Israel? Can I take an effect? Can I steal? Can I appropriate the piles of barley grains? Barley is animal field. And just by way of analogy, the question that David was dealing with, I need fuel for the tanks. The tanks in this case were their horses, and their animals of war. And the animals need food. So can I take the piles of barley owned by the Jews, litain lifnei behemto, so I can feed my animal, almanas l'shalem gedishim shaladoshim deplishtim, with the intent of eventually compensating the owners for the loss by giving them the piles of adoshim that they captured from the plishtim. Sholchu lei. So they sent the answer based on the following pasuk. Chavoil Yoshiv Rosha Gezela Yishalem. And the drosha on this is Afapi Shegzela Mishalem, even though you're willing to pay for the theft, Rosha Hu, you're still wicked. That is, in general, that stealing with the intent of paying for it is still an act of wickedness. Avolato Melachato, you're a king though. Umelach Puritz Lasus Derech V'ein Moichin Biyoda. The king has a right to appropriate for himself that which he needs, and no one can protest. Bishlamo Lamando Amar Lachlufe. According to the third approach, that it was a matter of Achlufe, literally means switching. I'll take the barley and pay you back with the Adoshim. Hainu Dichtiv Chad Kro. With that approach, I understand the presence of two psukim, one in the book of Samuel in Sefer Shmuel, and the other in the book of Chronicles in Sefer Divrei Yomim. Now, Divrei Yomim, the book of Chronicles, parallels the rest of the Tanakh, the rest of the scriptures. Oftentimes, there's a minor variation between that which is featured in Divrei Hayomim, the book of Chronicles, and that which is featured in the rest of the Tanakh. So here we have a situation like that, with the approach number three in mind, the third triangle in mind, the switch around idea. Hainu dechtiv chad kro, one pasuk says, Vatihi sham chelkas asodim lea adoshim. Uksiv chad kro, and another pasuk says, Vatihi chelkas asodim lea saurim. Notice we dashed underline the key words. Both psukim feature a field in which there was vegetation. One pasuk speaks about adoshim, and the other pasuk speaks about saurim. So we understand that the pasuk speaking about the saurim was the field of Jewish-owned barley, and the pasuk featuring adoshim, that was the field that had the Philistine barley, Philistine adoshim. Elo lamandi omar lemikli, but according to approach number two, which had to do with burning the pile of grain in order to destroy the enemy, my iboilu lahani trei kroy. What's the purpose of having these two psukim? Omar loch, so he will answer. Approach number two will answer you. The havunami gedishim v'adoshim d'Israel. There, in fact, were also piles of adoshim, also belonging to Jews. Davumit ribu b'lishtim, that Philistines were hiding in them as well. So that you had piles of Jewish-owned seorim, barley, and piles of Jewish-owned adoshim. Those are the two psukim, one in Shmuel, one in Divrei Hayomim. And in both of those piles, Philistines were hiding. And the same question was asked, can I burn those Jewish-owned piles in order to save myself? Bishlamo lamando amar lemikli, with regard to approach number two that spoke about lemikli, the issue of burning the piles, hainu dichtiv, with that we can understand the pasuk says in the same context. This is pasuk yud beis. It says vayisyatzev besocha chelka vayatzi leha. Literally, and he stood in that area, that portion, and he saved it. The idea of vayatzi leha is saving it from burning. He didn't allow it to be burned. Meaning, as Rashi says, since for the general population, we say it's osu lahatzil es atzmo mon chavero, one is not allowed to do that. Therefore, though I'm a king and I have royal rights, I am not going to do that. That's vayatzi leha, and he saved it from being burnt. So the word vayatzi leha is appropriate according to approach number two. Elo lamando amar achlufi mai vayatzi leha. According to approach number three that spoke about taking the barley in exchange for the adoshim, what is vayatzi leha? Answer, delo shavak luhu lachlufi. In fact, he withheld from doing that, from taking, from appropriating the Jewish-owned grains in anticipation of paying back with the Adoshim. So he, Vayatzilel, he saved it, he withheld from that switch. Bishlamo, Hani, Tarti, the approaches 2 and 3, Hainu Dichtiv, Trey, Kroi. We've explained the two psukim. Elo, Lamadomar, Tomun, Beish, Komet, Vayale, Mai, Iboyale, Kroi. But according to approach number 1, what do I learn from these psukim? Omar, well, here we're at the top of Daf Samach Aleph, Omer Aleph, continuing on the second line from the top now. Omar Loch, so the approach number 1 will tell you, Tomun v'chado mehanoch kome boyale. In fact, he needed answers to a couple of questions. The Tomun question, which we already presented, and one of the other approaches. And within those other approaches, we explained why I needed the two psukim. Bishlamo lemadomar hani tarti. I understand well, according to the approach that he asked, either what was involved in 2 or 3. Hainu dichtiv. The continuation of the posuk is understandable. It says velo ova David lishtoisom. Omar kevon deiko isura lo nicholi. The Pasuk says, on a literal basis, and David had no desire, did not wish to drink from it. So you see that the Pasuk describes David withholding himself from something. So approaches 2 and 3, we saw that because there was an element of prohibition, whether it was a matter of the Iser Gezel, the prohibition of stealing with the intent of returning, of repaying, or the question of being Matzil Atzmo B'Mamon Chaveru, saving yourself with someone else's property. So he said, since there's an element of prohibition, lo nicholi, it's not comfortable for me, and therefore he withheld and resisted. Elo laman di omar tomun bo'esh kame bayale. But according to the approach that said he asked about the issue of tomun, michti Gemorahu the Sholchule, they sent him a ruling, a tradition, how to rule on that Machlokis, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chachamim. They sent him something of a purely, we'll say, scholarly nature. Milo Ovi David Lishtoisam. What does it mean that David didn't wish to benefit from them? Answer: Delo Amrinu Mishmayu. David received his answer from some warriors that broke through enemy lines to get to the court to bring him that answer. Well, David says, okay, you may have brought me the answer, but I'm not going to say over the answer in your name. In general, when one is taught a point of Torah learning, it's incumbent upon the one who heard the ruling, or the one who received the benefit of the teaching, to say it over in the name of the one that taught it, that gave it to him, that communicated it to him. Here, David says, I'm not going to say it over in your name. Omar, David explains, Kach mekudlani mibeizdino shel Shmuel Ramosi. Thusly, I have as a tradition from the prophet Samuel. Ramosi is a reference to where Shmuel came from. I have a tradition from the court of Shmuel. Kolamoiser atzmoi lomus al divrei Torah. Someone who risks his life, puts himself into a life-threatening situation over Torah, over Torah matters, over Torah learning, ein oimrim dvar alocha mishmo. The Torah learning that you received under such circumstances is not said over in his name. On the surface, it would appear that as important as Torah learning is, one is not expected or even entitled to put himself into a life-threatening situation simply to get a piece of Torah knowledge. And again, on a superficial level, it appears in the eyes of David that they did something wrong. Hence, lo ova David lishtosam, David did not David withheld from what? From saying it over in their name. And the Pasuk says, Vayasach oisam l'Hashem, literally means, and he poured it out to God. Bishlam olamandar mahani tarti. I understand according to approaches 2 and 3, Mishum da'ovad l'shem shamayim. David's behavior was something beyond the call of duty. It was l'fnim yishus ha'din. He did something that was for the sake of heaven. So vayosech oisam l'shem is a hint, is a remez to David having acted with a heavenly motivation. Elolamandom or tomun be'esh, my vayosech oisam l'shem. But according to the approach that is approach number one, that he was seeking out information or a ruling concerning Tom Be'esh, my vayosech oisom l'Hashem. What does that posuk mean? Answer, the amrinu mishma de Gemara. He said over the teaching as a tradition, as we mentioned before, without saying it in their specific names. There is, of course, much more to be said, much more to analyze in this agadic passage, but in the context of Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shiurim, we often stick to the simple pshat, but at the same time, don't want any of our listeners to think that that's all there is to it. There is much more, and we recommend researching it and discovering the deeper meanings. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.